So this is the first nationwide senior division conference call of spring 2020, and I'm Ruth Sager. I'm the president of the National Federation of the Blind Senior Division. We'll be having a seminar at the National Convention. Our meeting day for the our business meeting will be July 16th, 2020. I don't know the room, but it'll be the usual time of 12:30 registration, probably 1:15, 1:30, starting the business part of our meeting. And we have, Robert has put together a calendar of events which appears on the NFB List Senior Listserv page. And on that page, he lists all the information that people have given him from their state. Many states have monthly calls, and sometimes they have other activities they want to post. So if you are interested in putting some information about what your group is doing, no matter what that group is, if you just want to share that, you can send Robert the information at Robert Leslie Newman. That's Robert Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E, Newman, N-E-W-M-A-N, at gmail.com. And he can add you to not the February calendar, but or the March calendar is probably getting ready now, too, but on upcoming months and events.
True.
So, yes, does someone have a question?
It was just Robert saying true. Thanks, Ruth.
True. Okay. So our topic today is our Live the Life You Want retreat. We've had two of them. We are going to have a third one. The third one will be October 18th through the 24th, and it will be at the same place, Rocky Bottom, which is in South Carolina. And today we have two presenters who are going to tell about their experience with the retreat, because you really want to hear from them, not from me. But I do have a flyer, which we'll be posting. And the process is that if you are interested in applying, you then apply to me, Ruth Sager, and I send you the application either by post or email. It's filled out. After you fill it out and I receive it, then we, I or one of the instructors or board members of the division will call and have a telephone interview with you. And at that point, we'll determine if what you're interested in is what we're interested in offering, and you will determine whether you are a successful candidate, and then from there you will pay the $300, which we do charge per participant, and that will be sent to Duncan Larson at the Colorado Center for the Blind, as she and Diane are our treasurers. So that's basically how that system works. So here to talk about the retreat, I have two people. I have Scott Solden, who is from Maryland, and I have Katie Dugan, who is from Georgia. So we'll start with Scott, and then he'll present what he has to say, and Katie, and then we'll open it up for questions. But I think that as they present, they may be answering a lot of your questions as you hear what they have to say. So, Scott, if you want to start, go for it.
Okay. Thank you, Ruth.
Mm-hmm.
So, hello, everyone. I'd like to share a little bit of my story with you today. I live in a suburb of Baltimore, Maryland. I am happily married, have two kids of the furry variety. Pause for chuckle. I've been losing eyesight since the day I was born, due to a disease called retinitis pigmentosa. I was originally diagnosed back in the early 70s at a very early age. My parents had noticed that I was having some difficulties, and my uncle had a few years earlier, had been diagnosed with the disease, so my parents thought it would be a good idea to take me to the Massachusetts Eye and Ear Institute for an evaluation, and that's when we got the wonderful news. Oops. Sorry, I'm at my computer. I've got notes here in front of me. So, The form of RP that we have, it's called X-linked, which is a genetic mutation in the X chromosome. Although there are a lot of different forms of RP. Ours that runs in our family is a relatively slow progression. So I'm currently, I'll be 50 this year. So it's been a long road, and I know, a lot of other diseases and things like that sometimes are definitely a lot quicker progression. Sorry, my work phone is ringing. You guys can't. Can you hear that or no?
Yeah, we can.
Yep.
Okay, so look.
I'm sorry, is this the NFB senior call?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Just give it back to phone so it doesn't keep ringing. Sorry about that.
It'd be interesting to know what your employment
is.
At
work.
Well, yeah, I work from home, so... I muted my main phone, but that was one of the cordless extensions going off. Sorry, I kind of lost my train of thought there. So I'm gonna skip some of that stuff. So along this journey of vision loss. There's been some kind of milestones for when things have changed. It's not really anything that I notice on a day-to-day basis. But when you kind of reflect in, 5 or 10 year chunks of time, you can kind of, really, identify some changes. I am very sorry. I lost my spot again. Mm-hmm. Darn eyesight. So before I became introduced to the NFB, my vision loss was something that was going to happen at somewhere down the road, but based upon one of the organizations that I was a part of back then, the thought was that a smart scientist somewhere would come up with a cure, and I really wouldn't have to deal with the eventuality of blindness. Well, things changed, and in my mid 30s, I was actually declared legally blind. And if everybody remembers that the fable of the ant and the grasshopper, I was the grasshopper. But thankfully, to do with the NFB, that's changing, and that's definitely very thankful for that. So in early in my life, growing up, we knew that I had this eye disease, and at some point, there was going to be a loss of vision, but when I was a youngster, my parents didn't really keep a leash on me. They just let me go out and play, ride bikes, pretty much whatever I wanted to do. They just let me be a kid. And in my teens. There was a little bit more difficulty with my vision. mainly in dark or low light conditions. I was able to get my driver's license and, early on drove daytime and nighttime. In my 20s, just noticed more of an issue with low light and dark conditions, which kind of stopped the driving at night, but I still did drive during the daytime. And in my 30s, driving to work, I drove through a tunnel that goes beneath Baltimore's Harbor, and it happened to be a kind of a partly cloudy day, and I wasn't wearing sunglasses to help the transition from brighter sunlight into the darkness that was in the tunnel, and I ended up scraping the curb on the side of the tunnel as the road kind of curves a little bit as you enter. Thank goodness, I did not have an accident, and didn't injure anybody, and actually did make it to work that day. But that was the last day I actually decided to drive through the tunnel. And it was another one of those kind of epiphany moments that, Scott, you really don't see too well. So I made an appointment with the National Eye Institute in Bethesda, Maryland, which is just outside of Washington, D.C. And after that visit is when I was, had this declaration of legal blindness. But I didn't really get any help. No information on organizations that could help me. And anything that I could read or learn or whatever. So I was kind of at a loss. One doctor did suggest that I contact the Department of Rehabilitative Services. But that was pretty much it. I did contact DOORS, went through the whole application interview process and all of that kind of good stuff. And couple of weeks in through this process, they actually denied me services. Because I was gainfully employed. Was the main reason, but kind of the way it made me feel is, I had to lose my job, destroy my credit history, all so that they could teach me techniques and tricks to help me get a job. Didn't really make sense to me. So again, they didn't really offer anything besides that. My counselor did, however, he did give me a name of an instructor that worked for the Maryland School for the Blind. At first he was a little reluctant to talk to me because I was an adult and not a child. but he did actually agree to come to my house for a fee and give me some white cane training. Kind of just basic, how do you hold the cane? How do you swing it back and forth? We really didn't get into traffic crossings or any of the more, complex items for orientation and mobility. Once again, I was kind of on my own trying to figure out, where do I go from here? What do I do? At the time, the company that I worked for, I was about 12 years into the career, and facing not being able to drive anymore to actually be able to commute to work, it was kind of at a crossroads in my life. Uber and Lyft weren't out there. Since I was denied services through DOORS, I didn't have access to mobility. or any of the other types of services. Public transportation is available, but the commute would be about 2 hours each way, which really wasn't anything I was looking forward to doing. So, I kind of did some soul searching and had eventually decided to go back to school to study massage therapy. So once I had applied and was accepted to go to this school, of course, you know, that came the time to talk to my current employer. And, you know, basically I had given them 3 weeks notice and, you know, wanted to start a new chapter in my life. Well, evidently my employer must have really, really liked me because they didn't want to let me go. But they definitely understood that I, you know, needed to, you know, do some things, you know, because of my vision loss, and had you know, graciously allowed me to start working from home. I, you know, started working from home, was going to school in the morning, basically going to school full time, working full time. And made it through the 10-month process of massage therapy school. Got my degree, got all the state licensure, and all of that kind of good stuff. But at the same point, still kept working for the company that I had been working for many years. The company is we're a multifamily residential. Rough carpentry framing company. It's a big mouthful there, but basically, if it's a wood apartment building that's multi-story, we're probably one of the contractors in Maryland that have built that. And my role was at that time I designed roof and floor trusses, which are basically the puzzle pieces that make up the floors that you walk on and the roof that covers your head. And at that time, you know, my acuity was still okay, even though my peripheral vision was what really caused the declaration of legal blindness. Mm-hmm. So, you know, There was, you know, some computer softwares that I used. Most of it was built into Windows at the time. Things like ZoomText actually had software conflicts with a lot of the design software that we used, so that really wasn't an option. But yeah, I'll fast forward a little bit. I know this is getting a little long. Yeah. So come to find out, when I was declared legally blind, the president and vice president of the company that I worked for started to do some searching on their own for resources for the blind. And lo and behold, there was a organization that was only a couple of miles away from our main office, which was the National Federation of the Blind. They had taken a tour of the NFB headquarters and really were fascinated by all of the technology that was in the technology center. And although, you know, the items that were there, they really couldn't understand, you know, how it could help me to do my job for the company. What it did give them was a lot of optimism of what could be, and that optimism led them to actually give me more confidence in myself on what could be done. So I had come to the NFB through I guess one of the chapters that are actually take place at the National Headquarters. Didn't really have a good experience at that meeting. Really felt like an outsider. But did some more research and found a chapter that was a little closer to home, and it was a completely different experience with that chapter. And I'm very, very thankful to have found, I call it my second family. So my first national convention that I went to was in 2017 down in Orlando. And if anybody hasn't gone to one, I would suggest that that you make it a point to try to get to one, because it was life changing. It was just amazing. Walking through the exhibit hall and seeing all of the devices and organizations that are there to help. I'm just all struck by it. after that experience, of course, I still was going to local chapter meetings. And then in 2018 had to deal with my wife had a pretty serious illness, which, all throughout the year we had taken many trips to various hospitals and rehab centers and all that kind of good stuff, which really kind of drove it home for me that I really wasn't as independent as I thought I was. And there were several things that I believed I needed to learn very, very quickly in order to be independent. For God forbid she didn't pull through her illnesses. And so I had happened to be listening to a podcast of the Braille Monitor. And there was an article about the seniors retreat, which got me thinking. I was like, wow. Since I hadn't had any luck through state services or resources, and I had contacted Ruth, and she, although I was probably I ended up being the youngest person last year, but she and the board were gracious enough to allow me to attend.
So what did you learn?
I'm skipping ahead here. I'm trying to find my notes again.
I think the year before we had someone younger than you. What I say is I don't want 22-year-olds to come, but I don't do an ID on age, because it's the circumstances. And if a person is willing to learn and wants to learn non-visual skills, and depending on their circumstances and how, and since you had been denied from Maryland, I don't see that you had other options to learn things. So that's my criteria as far as I'm concerned.
Like I told you then, I'm very mm-hmm. thankful that mm-hmm.
Question.
Shelley
Koppel, have you used some of the things that you did learn? Did it give you the edge of confidence that you felt you needed?
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. Now, I still need lots more practice, and especially for Braille, that I think you and I had spoken about before, Shelley?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The first day was a lot of air travel for me. Flew to Atlanta, had a probably 4 or 5 hour layover, and then a short flight from Atlanta to Greensboro, or Greens, Yeah, Prince Bill, Spartansburg.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I went the wrong. I was met at the airport and brought to Rocky Bottom, where I think dinner had just been served. So my first challenge was to go through a cafeteria line without the assistance of my wife, who I kiddingly call her my seeing eye Sue. But you know, a lot of what I do, you know, after I experience something, I often reflect back on it, and I'm not quite sure why I had such a reservation about going through a cafeteria line, especially since the event was geared for the blind and low vision. And you know, after all, we were there to challenge ourselves and learn new things. Oh, there's that wonderful phone again. I'm sorry, guys. I just threw it across the room. Hopefully, it won't be too loud.
Well, I think what it is for anything that's new, we always think of the worst things that can happen. You know, if you haven't done something, you think of what could happen. Rather than what actually does happen a lot of times.
Yeah, like you know, spilling the tray on the floor or
yeah.
bumping right, into right. somebody. mm-hmm. But But you know, by the second day, you know, going through that cafeteria line was just another normal activity. Nothing really worrisome, and you know, just like you know, after getting used to finding drinks or finding the table where you wanted to sit with the people that you've met, you know, all became easier with practice. And by the end of the week, it was it was definitely nowhere near as scary or you know, apprehensive about that. after dinner that first day, we had the first of many group meetings where each of us introduced ourselves to the group, and we learned which smaller group that we would be placed in, and introduced to a lot of the different classes that we would be attending during that week. The second day, of course, we had to go from our lodging and walk down to the community center where the breakfast was being served. And I remember coming out and was like, okay, where do I go? it was dark when I was taken to the lodge, so I really didn't know where things or how things were laid out, but thankfully I had bumped into somebody, not literally though that time, that helped me get down to the community center, and you know, so we enjoyed breakfast. And the first lesson that I had attended was my first cane travel lesson, and although I had had some basic lessons before, the couple of things that really stand out for me on this day was, you know, how to use the sounds that you hear around you to be able to not only orientate yourself, but to actually understand where things are around you. This first lesson was also the first time I had worn sleep shades, which was, again, another one of those things that were a little apprehensive, but it wearing the sleep shades was definitely helped to focus more attention on your other senses, whether it's hearing or even something like feeling the heat from the sun and what direction the sun is compared to, you know, where you wanted to travel to. The things that I had never really thought of before about, you know, traveling with a cane. You know, it was more about, okay, the cane's touching the ground and what do I feel? And those couple of things, you know, when you think about them, you know, they're fairly simple things, but they are very valuable in that orientation and mobility.
This is Ruth, and I wanted to ask you. Of course, when you first were there, you didn't, but we gave you blindfold sleep shades, and you wore them. I think you wore them all day, all the time. Most of the time.
I wore them most of the time.
How did that experience be different from other learning that you might have had? How did that help your ability to learn and get confident then?
I guess probably the one thing that I would say is that, you know, without being able to cheat with the what vision I do have, it really did heighten the other senses, but both hearing and the sense of touch. But both with the cane. Well, because of course with the cane, you get both the tactile sense of the cane itself. But you also get the sound from, you know, whether it's an echo off of a building or if there's, you know, kind of a wide open space, it's a lot of different sounds that I never really, I mean, I guess I got that to some point, without the shades, but with the shades that really, and it just kind of really like laser focused that sensation to me. Mm-hmm. And like most things, you know, after you did it for a while with the shades, things became easier. Mm-hmm. The only issue that I really had with the shades is that my particular pair were not adjustable. After a couple of days, they were kind of sore and it got a little more distracting. Mm-hmm. So I had taken my sunglasses and put little pieces of paper inside of them to make, you know, shades out of my sunglasses.
Shades. Okay, well, that works. Okay. Yeah. Well, I want Katie to have some time here too.
Yeah.
Katie is from Georgia, and she came to the retreat. So, Katie, why don't you share some of your experience and what you actually, you know, did at the retreat and so forth.
Thank you. So, I was trying to remember how I learned about the retreat, and actually, I just don't remember. Mm-hmm. I just know that before I started making plans to go to Vegas, for National, I knew about the retreat, so I made sure that I had all of those plans intact before I left home. And I expected that I would get a lot from it, and I really did. I consider it to be one of my best investments in myself last year. Now, the reason that this retreat was so important to me is that I'm still in the process of transitioning from a small city in Mississippi, from Greenville, to Atlanta. And I knew that I would need a different skill set here. I didn't know what I needed to know, but I knew I didn't know whatever that was that I needed to know. So that was why I wanted to make sure that I had had access to the retreat, if possible, and I did get that done. I do want to say, before I forget, that the retreat center is very nice. I had no idea, and because a lot of people will say a lot of things. I had no idea where I was going, but I was pleasantly surprised. That center is very well maintained and it's spacious. It's a rural setting, but I felt totally safe. Even when we walked down the mountainside early in the morning, it's not quite daybreak a couple of times. I felt totally safe out there. There were enough sighted people around to help us, and then there was us, who, the blind people who were participating, and we got the golf cart rides up and down the mountain whenever we needed to. The center is on a mountain in South Carolina, the Rocky Bottom Center is. So that the center itself, the retreat center itself, it's really a good experience with the streams of water and the, like I said, very well-maintained lodges, and the volunteers, everybody. It's just really, really, that's a good part of the experience in itself. Then, for me, personally, there are several areas that I want to share that I believe really helped me a lot. And the first one is in expanding my support network. I think that as I'm becoming more and more involved in trying to access the services that I need in the area, I'm becoming more and more aware of how much work there is to be done, because people don't know us. The lady who delivered my groceries yesterday asked me if I was allowed to sign for them. So, you know, because of my NFB training, I knew how to be nice about it and just say, oh, I guess if I'm spending my money, I should be able to sign for it, or something like that. And just sign. But people don't know us. I'm sorry.
That's a good reply.
I was affirming.
Oh, okay. Yeah, but when I go out, sometimes it's like I'm the lady with two heads or something. Mm-hmm. So I know there's so much work to be done to advocate for myself, first of all, to get the services that I need, and then for people, blind people, seniors in similar circumstances to mine, to get the transportation that I need, because I'm running into a lot of obstacles because I'm not on the mobility service line, just less than a mile outside it. But I have to challenge it, and I know I'm going to need my support network to help me get it done. That's really important to me right now. Then another area was the level of instruction that I received. So I'm agreeing with what Scott was saying. It's on a different level when there are small groups, and I could ask the questions that I needed. Then because the instructors were so knowledgeable, they like in one travel instruction session, I was told about the thing about listening to the echoes of my cane to determine where I was in the building, that kind of thing. Nobody had ever told me that before. And nobody had ever told me, although I had some instruction in trying to follow where the sun was or is to determine what time of day it is, nobody ever said, because you need to stay oriented to where you are in space at all times. So just little tidbits of information like that can make all of the difference, even if you've had some cane travel instruction. That was the second way that it helped me. Then the third area was in being able to figure out exactly where I am, like in Braille instruction. From the time that I lost my eyesight in 2008, I've had conflicting opinions about what I need to do. Somebody will say, you probably won't learn because older people won't learn. And somebody else will say, everybody can learn Braille. But the Braille instruction at the retreat sat down with me and took me through some simple exercises. So I'm able to say, okay, here's where I am in this. So when I go to the Center for the Visually Impaired, that's what I can say to them. Because I'm finding that they'd like to ask me, what do you want from us? going to the retreat, figuring out where I am, helps me to answer that question intelligently so we don't waste time. Jump off right here. This is where I am. And being at the retreat helped me with that. But I think that the most important thing for me was in the confidence building and getting over some of my fear of actually moving around independently. And I don't know what happened except that when we went on the travel assignment downtown and the instructors were saying, do this, do this, do this, and it's like little light bulbs were coming on. Yeah, I know that. I know that. I know that. I know how to do that. And then, oh, I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to cross this busy street. Oh, I didn't pay close enough attention. Or I just don't have the skill set that I need to find my way around, get back in an unfamiliar setting. But then I was not afraid anymore. All of a sudden I knew, okay, but I can do this. There's so much that I already know. And I know how to ask for what I don't know. So that's just a few of the things that came to my mind when I was trying to think about how valuable that retreat was for me. I would encourage anybody to go who's thinking about going. I would have to warn people, though, that if you go, you'll have to manage what you eat because there's so much good food that you'll have a tendency and you'll get in trouble.
And it has to change.
Diabetes or some disease like that. Yeah, you know, some health condition. Yeah, but I could not recommend it highly enough. It was really, really beneficial for me. So I appreciate you allowing me to share that.
Well, thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions of our two speakers or other just general questions about the retreat?
I'm Marvin Bottomley.
Wait, say, who is the lady?
This is Marvin Bottomley.
Oh, Marvin. I'm sorry, Marvin. Go ahead. Yes, if you have questions.
About that money to go. Mm-hmm. That one of my problems. Mm-hmm. And I don't have it.
Well, sometimes people work with their state, you know, people within their state, and sometimes they also, there's, you know, other ways sometimes to raise money. Sometimes you can apply to organizations such as the Lions Club or a Rotary Club or other things, and they can sponsor you, but you do have to, you know, figure out what you can. And we try and work with people. We've had people pay in payments, you know, if that works for a person, so we... You know, but we do have to, we do get a grant for part of the retreat, but it does cost us about $9,000 to put on the retreat, so we do have to charge for room and board, and I think we make it as reasonable as we can. So I would say, you know, work with people around you to figure out what you, you know, could do. That's a good confidence-building thing to do also. I think if people are invested in working towards coming to the retreat, then they'll also value it because it'll mean something.
Susan Stanzel, Kansas.
Susie.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to ask Scott if he learned some computer skills that he could use after he went home. Because from what you said, Scott, I get the idea that you're using your eyesight with your computer all the time, probably. I don't know if you do now. That's what I'm wondering. If you learned JAWS and how you are doing with your computer now.
Correct. During the retreat, I did not do any of the computer classes, but I do know that there were some available. I've been teaching myself NVDA, which is a free screen reader.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So for my work, you know, because I use blueprints a lot, you know, a lot of that is graphical information. So that's where I use screen magnification.
Correct.
But for a lot of the email communication that I do is I do mostly screen reader with that, which is, it's actually helped me to really proofread a lot of the technical writing that I do.
That's kind of the thing that I was wanting to know. I was a programmer, and I've used JAWS all my ever since it was invented, shall we say. Not all of my life. So I didn't use computers all of my life.
Let me just say, we don't offer a lot of computer because some people, Susie, really want just computer, and we're not equipped for that.
Okay.
And we've had some issues in the past with the Internet because we're in a rural setting.
Correct.
Sometimes that can be a problem, too. I mean, we do try what we can do, but in a week, we wouldn't be able to teach a person like JAWS in a week anyway.
Correct.
I mean, it wouldn't
be
possible.
Yes.
We can show people this is what you need to look into further. I mean, that's partly what the retreat can do is here's what's available. We'll give you a taste of it. You can see if it's some, you know, how can you use this in your life or when, and then how to pursue it, because we can't, in a week, we can't do something.
Right. Then I'd like to know from both people what you worked on during the week, what you came out knowing. Besides confidence, I know both of you work with the cane, but do you do some cooking? What do you do?
This is Katie. So I want to add to what was being said about the technology. Even though it is limited, we did have the opportunity to work with some technology, like download apps, refining some of our skills with using some of the apps and some devices, different kinds of accessible devices. Some of them we knew and we could make, or I could make a decision, oh, I know about that one. I don't really like that one. I know about this app. I much prefer using it on another device, like Bard. I don't like using Bard. This is just a personal thing. I prefer using Bard on my Victor Reader. But then there were people there who didn't have any experience with either, and they were introduced to it altogether. So yeah, we did have some technology enough to introduce people, I think, and to introduce them to some of the devices and to help them to make a decision as to what they might prefer using or might be able to use. And there are cooking classes. We did have a cooking class, and we learned some unique little tools that we can use with cooking. There are kitchens in both of the lodges. Did that answer your question, Susie? I'm sorry.
Yes, it did. Scott, did you do any cooking?
Yeah, I sure did. I did three cooking lessons. Two of them were with Ruth. Where Ruth was our instructor. The first one was mainly an exploration of the kitchen and identifying tools and utensils that were there for us to use. The second lesson, our group decided to make an omelet. So each of us had a separate task. There was salting and chopping of vegetables. I was in charge of cracking the eggs and mixing the eggs. And when this is, Ruth, you'll probably remember this one.
Yes, I do remember.
When we actually tried to cook the omelet. I'm not quite sure how you can make an omelet that is both burnt and raw at the same time, but that's something that happened during the lesson. since I've been home, I actually have made some omelets on my own with the sleep shades on.
Awesome!
Wonderful!
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So even though I've cooked before, that experience of cooking non-visually is gave me some confidence here to attempt a few things.
And then you grilled as well, right?
And we grilled, yeah. That was different. You know, of course, I think there was too many cooks in the kitchen that day.
Yeah.
Oh. Johanna Bacon from New Jersey.
Go ahead, Johanna.
Yeah, I just was wondering, how are the accommodations? Do you have your own room? Do you share a bathroom? You know, what are the accommodations like?
So, in the women's, well, it is what was used for the women's, I guess I should say, the lodge where we stay, each room had two beds with its own bathroom. And I think the men may have had more beds, but I don't think there was a large enough group to use all of them. I don't remember, Scott. How many beds were in those rooms?
Well, in the lodge, I mean, each of us ended up having our own separate room, but there were four bunk beds in the room that I was in, but there was a shared bathroom between my room and one other room.
This is Shelley Kopp. In the building that Scott was in, there's both rooms with bunk beds with adjoining bathrooms. They call it kind of a Jack and Jill situation. But then there was one room that had two single beds, and its adjoining room was a double bed, and then it had a shared bathroom. But then in the lodge where Katie was at, yes, it's the whole lodge is a room with two double beds and a bathroom of its own. So it depends on kind of where you're at on the campus. Yeah.
So do the people that do come to this, do they have their own room or are you sharing a room?
You're sharing a room.
Okay.
Whether you're sharing a room. How do you answer that, Ruth?
Someone may have a certain situation where they want their own room, and we would see if we could accommodate that. But generally, we want people just because part of the reason for going is that you network with other people and learn from other people, and you give to other people as well. And so, we like the idea that, you know, if two people share a room, that's not, I don't think it's too cumbersome.
Mm-hmm. No, the rooms are okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of, there's not maybe a lot of closet space. The lodge where Katie stayed, there were closets in the rooms. In the room where Scott was, I'm not so sure there was
no
a closet. But yeah, there's dressers. And we're wearing T-shirts and jeans and stuff like that anyway, so it's not like there would maybe be as much need to hang things up. It depends, I suppose. Yeah. And there's typically a sliding door in the rooms, except for the lodge. Well, now, okay, the building with the bunk beds do not necessarily have a sliding door. But there's a screened-in back porch where the rooms that have the bathrooms in the room, there is a sliding door, and there's a little deck. So you can get some outside air and that kind of thing.
Hmm.
So it's just a variety of settings. Give you different...
And when do you normally have this? This is Johanna Bacon again, I'm sorry. You normally do this in October?
This year we will, yes. 18th through the 24th of October.
Okay, and how is the weather at that time there?
It should be really pretty nice. Typically, unless it's a rainy week, or rainy days, which you can't totally keep from knowing that, but typically in South Carolina, and it's up in the mountains, so it's going to be cooler in the evenings, but it should be like 70s, 80s in the daytime. Mm-hmm. At least it can be. Mm-hmm. So, and it's real pretty. It's a real pretty setting.
Is there air conditioning or it's not needed? Is it fans or is it,
There's heating and air conditioning in all the rooms and fans, ceiling fans.
Mm-hmm.
But there's heating and air in every room, pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah, it can still get warm. I don't remember if we had a lot of air conditioning in October, but last year it was September, and it definitely was hot during the day. Definitely.
Right. Through the Stanzel?
Yes.
Tom Anderson told me of the wonderful trip to the apple orchard. Do you go do that each year? Tom came and helped in 2018.
Yes. We have done that the past 2 years. We're thinking of doing something different this year. But, we do have some activity, whatever that is, so that people get, you know, it's a fun time, but it's also a learning,
right,
learning activity as well. Yeah.
Kind of an opportunity to put your skills to use that you've learned during the week.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
Well,
who
this
is the
Mark,
oldest?
I've got to get off.
Pardon? Say that again.
I've got to get off.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Have we answered your questions, Marvin?
No.
Well, okay. I guess you can call maybe Jane. Are you from New Jersey? No, where are you from?
Arkansas, Kansas.
Kansas. Okay. Well, you'll be
you're
in touch with
Who
Tuesday.
Is this? Who is this that is talking?
Marvin Bottomley.
You might, if you, I don't know if you know Nancy Pruitt. She came to our training last year. She's from Arkansas.
Are you in Kansas, Marvin?
Yes.
Oh. You're from Arkansas.
Yeah.
Okay, that is near Wichita, correct?
Yeah.
Diane, could you talk with Marvin, please? Diane Hemphill?
She's on.
Oh.
I don't know if she's on, Susie.
Okay.
But,
further talk with Tom might help, too.
Yeah. I think we can find people to talk to you about the retreat, Marvin, okay? Like Tom Bickford or Tom Anderson, sorry. Wrong Tom.
Yes, we'll need to get your contact information. Do you have that? Does anyone have that?
Yeah. Tim Page.
Tom Page has that? All right. That's all I needed to know.
Okay.
Yeah, Tom Page.
He is the state president. That's all I needed to know. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for getting on.
Okay.
Okay, Marvin.
Okay.
Does anyone else have questions or comments or things?
Sherry Cook.
Yes.
Just a quick question, since I know a lot of seniors, and I know the age range can vary, but I know that a lot of seniors develop sensory neural hearing loss.
Mm-hmm.
When you do your travel training, do you work with that particular combination of problems?
We do, because one of the things I do ask on the application is, do you have any special needs, such as hearing aids? Because also in conversation, you want to make sure that people can hear what you're saying. Otherwise, you know, it won't be very beneficial to them.
Well,
so
and the other thing
we work on that, and also in the group discussions and things like that.
The one thing that I was concerned about is kind of doing when you do travel training.
Mm-hmm.
I have better hearing in one ear than the other, and so I was wondering how you address where you tend to want to turn your head to hear something better, and then of course your body follows, and that gets you into trouble. When you do your travel training, do you address that kind of thing about how not to veer where you're trying to hear?
Yes, we will ask the person what works. Where do you want me to stand so that you can hear what I have to say? And we make people aware of that, because sometimes people aren't aware that they're doing just that very thing.
Yeah.
And I would say that we would converse with you about whatever it is that we're trying to, what knowledge we're trying to impart, but then we would give you a technique and have you practice that so that, you know, as if you were doing it so that you don't have the distraction. In other words, we'll teach you how to how to work individually on your own, but we will completely describe it and talk about it and make sure that you understand what we're talking about before you would strike out on your own or anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And somebody would be with you. Somebody will be with you, either beside you or behind you or in front of you or whatever. But we will definitely make sure that you understand what we're trying to accomplish and then that you hear how to do it. Yeah. We will.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And, for example, another thing people do, let's say they've had a balance issue and maybe they've had a partial stroke or something. What happens is probably usually on the side that they're more sturdy, they move forward, but then the other foot kind of just slides up to that one. So they're actually taking a step with one foot and then bringing the other foot only up to or beside the other, you know. So you sometimes don't walk the way you want to. So, you know, being aware of showing people that, you know, with your weaker side, you need to stretch that foot out further past, you know, things like that we can help people with, that at least have them aware of it so that they, you know, will be able to correct it and work on improving those kinds of things.
Yeah, good enough.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the classes that we do teach are, you know, basically we do ask people what they're interested in, but we do want everybody to take all of the classes because you can always learn something. Even as Katie said, it's something she was familiar with, but other things maybe not. But it's still useful to, you know, hear it and hear what other people have to say and how they use something. So we teach Braille, beginning Braille. We do teach cane travel. And cooking is food preparation, storage, and cooking, basic cooking. And then some of the men in particular wanted to grill, so they were able to do that. We also teach... Shelley works a lot with people on different aids and appliances, like using a recorder, a digital recorder, and using the pen friend, and other ways to label things and organize, so forth. You know, a lot of little practical things, how to manage things at home. Mm-hmm. And
I remember one of the devices that Shelley showed us was the prescription.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really cool one.
Yeah.
So you get to see it, how it works, and, you know, where you can get it and that kind of thing. And then we do have a discussion every afternoon, and we talk about, you know, not about our blindness really, but about how we can live in the sighted world and how we can deal with people's misperceptions of our blindness. You know, they limit us by what they think we can and can't do. And how do you speak up and be assertive, and how do you advocate for yourself? And, you know, when do you just have a sense of humor? And, you know, there's no right or wrong answer. It's each situation you have to determine. And you have the right to make a decision. And sometimes you have to be emphatic with people, and other times, you know, let it just slide. So it depends upon what it is you're dealing with. But we do talk a lot about, and then meal times is another time we talk a lot about things, just sitting down with people and conversing.
And so we would get into, like, say, cooking might be a time. Maybe somebody has some issues with, cutting meat is one I hear occasionally. Mm-hmm. And we would help you with, you know, just how do you go about doing something simple? And we're going to do it in a way that is not invasive of your intelligence or things like that. But it's things that when you're out in public, you want to be a little more aware of, so that you're feeling like you're comfortable with it, and other people aren't going to, you know, get too crazy curious and say kind of crazy things or something. And we would help you learn how to go through a buffet line, or how to carry your own tray if you were in a buffet setting, and some things like that. So we'll cover a lot of different things that, you know, it's kind of like the sky's the limit on what questions you want to ask and what things we'll talk about and stuff like that. So we try and be as helpful as we can be. And yet, with your dignity to learn and, you know, do that. So
I think somebody was asking, how old is our oldest person? 86 was our oldest person overall from the time we started. And she
right.
was a spry 86. She was great.
Yeah.
She put some of the younger folks to shame because she was going up and down that mountain.
Yep, she was. Yep, she was.
That's what Tom Anderson told me, and I was so
yes.
impressed.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
She put me to shame, I think.
So, yeah. The one thing that people do have to do is they do have to be able to administer their own medications. They have to know the dosage and the amount, the time, and so forth. We cannot... We can help people organize their meds. We can help them label them and whatever, but we cannot administer. Okay, that's something that we are not trained to do and we cannot do.
Yeah.
So that is the one that can be a restriction for some folks. Are there any other questions or comments or things people want to talk about anything or with the seniors before we... conclude?
This is Shante in Florida. I have one
yes.
question. So,
yes.
With regard to the cost, is it only $300 or is there, I mean, you get there on your own? Is that how it works?
Okay. Yes. The retreat costs $300. That covers you being picked up at the airport, taken to the camp, everything that occurs at the camp other than if we go someplace and you want to buy something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, your room, food, and board, and basic activities. And then back to the airport. But the person does have to pay their cost because people come from across the country. We've had people from 9 different sure. states, 10 different states. So the person does have the cost of traveling however they get to Greenville, Spartanburg. Most
right.
people tend to fly, but that would be an expense that the attendee would incur.
And there is Southwest
Thank
Airlines
you.
There, which a lot of places, Southwest is, you know, one of the airlines that can be a little more discounted. We have all the major airlines at the Greenville, Spartanburg, like your American and Delta and Southwest are the main ones I can think of.
At Johanna Bacan again?
Yes.
Okay, you only do this one time in the year, and
yes.
the other parts of the year, what is that lodge used for?
We rent it out to various groups, public, you know, like a lot of churches rent it. A massage therapy group was just there a couple weeks ago that rented it for the weekend. That's how we make our income through the year. And then in the summers, we have, South Carolina has 2 senior camps that we run just in our own state. And then we have children's camp in the summer for a week. And there's other NFB groups of South Carolina, and anybody can really rent it as far as that goes. We have even some colleges from Florida that come up and rent the facility. We've had people from, you know, the Olympics, training for various aspects of the Olympics, or bicycle groups, or different things like that. So we just, it's free. Carolina that's blind can stay there in the year. And there's sometimes fees for, you know, some of the extra relatives and stuff like that. But the blind, it is just a public facility throughout the year that is utilized. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Mm-hmm. And you only are doing this retreat once a year.
Correct.
We are right now. Yes. Yes. Because that's all we have funding for.
Okay.
I mean, we're working on other funding, but, you know, it takes time. And also, most grants want you to serve lots and lots of people because they feel that they're beneficial. But with this retreat, it's kind of the opposite. I want to have a group small enough so that people who attend actually get their money's worth, that they actually learn and can then make decisions in their life where to go from here. This is kind of the place where I think if we can demonstrate and show people what's possible, then the people can determine for themselves where, what direction they want to go, you know, and how they want to use the skills and, you know, where to proceed. So the week gives us about that much time to do that. So I limit it to 16 people. So, and that's why, because I want it to really be beneficial. And if we had more people at a certain point, you wouldn't have the one-on-one instruction, or two-in-one. I mean, rarely do you have more, you know, an instructor working with more than two people. And it, there's a reason, because that way you can actually get your, not only your questions answered, but the interaction between the two of you will, can really benefit you in your learning, I believe. And that's really my focus, you know, because if you only have a week, then let's make it really every minute count, you know, that you're there.
All right, and you said that the people of, is it just North Carolina or all of Carolina can go there whenever they want?
It's residents of South Carolina that are blind can come here. And there's like a save the date, kind of a small fee, but otherwise you don't pay for renting the facility.
Now, you would have to get your own food in that, though, wouldn't you?
Right.
I mean,
and
you can't just come up and think, yeah. You know.
You would have to schedule that.
Yeah.
We do keep a calendar and stuff like that.
I mean, because the $300 that we charge people, that pays for a little more than our food bill. I mean, to be honest, when we're serving, you know, you'd be quite surprised how much food, you know, when you're, even if you're making it for 25 people for a week, it adds up. Well, you can imagine it adds up.
Yeah.
There is a website. It's nsbofsc.org. And if you get on that website, you can look for the link to Rocky Bottom.
Okay. Thank you.
The official name we go by is Rocky Bottom Retreat and Conference Center of the Blind.
Mm-hmm.
But most people just call it Rocky Bottom.
Yeah.
Right. But I'm happy to entertain questions if you want to call me at a later time or Ruth or something. But living here, I can certainly help you with any ongoing questions or anything if about renting or whatever.
Yeah, you probably know more about that than me. I don't know about that. But it does seem to work for our purposes very nicely.
Right.
If I could find another location and could afford it, I probably could do a retreat in every state just because the need is there. But, you know, we don't have the funding and the people to do that. But so this is what we started, and we're continuing it. Hopefully, at some point, we'll find another location, maybe on the West Coast or something, where we can at least have two retreats. But that hasn't happened just yet because it's very expensive on the West Coast. So our next call is going to be March 18th, which is a Wednesday, the same time, same numbers, and it is going to be Stacy Savarenka. She works for the American Foundation for the Blind, but she's been Nebraskan and so forth, and she has a blog called Blind Traveler. So she's going to talk about that and talk about her work with the AFB, and she will be on Wednesday, March 18th.
At 4 p.m.
If you're not on our listserv, there is an NFB senior listserv page that you can get on, and then you'll find out all the different, we always announce upcoming events and things on our NFB listserv page. Okay, does anybody else have any more comments or questions? Well, I want to thank Scott Solda and Katie Dugan for their presentation and speaking with us today. I appreciate it very much. We probably could have talked another hour, but this hour has been, I think, helpful for people to learn about the retreat and what is possible for maybe someone you know, or you know. So the process would be that they would contact me, Ruth Sager, and I'm at rsager78@gmail.com, and apply for an application. Then that application would be filled out, sent back to me, and we would go with a phone interview. And from there, they'll learn what to do. So.
Great.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, everyone. And we hope to see most of you March 18th, which is a Wednesday, for our next call.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Robert.